Show presents Scratch a Track,
the podcast where we debate which track to scratch off some of the most known and unknown albums of all time.
We live in an era of singles.
This is an album.
People no longer listen to an album for the work it truly is.
It kind of defines a band.
It's just not something that people relate to nowadays.
We've all gotten the dreaded.
Started out as a game.
Which track on the album would you scratch out if you had to? Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show. I am the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today we are going to discuss Elephant by the White Stripes. Correct me if I'm wrong, dude, the first full-length album that we are getting into by the White Stripes. Our apologies, because with a band like the White Stripes, one could argue we should have got to something sooner.
Not perfect, and we don't claim to be. But yes, you are 100% correct, Grim. Last year, we did do an episode, our first impressions of the White Stripes' greatest hits, which is definitely a band worthy of greatest hits. Many of the songs off this Elephant album are on that. However, we had some discrepancies that, you know, we would have maybe picked some other songs off other albums that did make the greatest hits. So we highly recommend checking that album out. We also highly recommend giving us a
like, subscribe, and comment below.
Thank you very much. That would be very, very helpful because we like to talk music, we like to talk albums,
and we want to know your thoughts.
Exactly.
And opinions. Yeah. This is bigger than just us. It's bigger than this.
It just starts with us.
So. Yeah.
Well, anyways, Grim, this is their fourth studio album. And probably the one I would say most people know because of the song Seven Nation Army. It's their mammoth hit that, you know, has been played on the radio over and over and over again. It is a global song. People know it's, I think, like you were saying earlier, sports events around the world.
Oh, dude. Try to go to one and not hear it like when there's a lull or something. Right. I mean, it's.
Yeah. In 2018, it was at the World Cup. It was played before every match.
Wow.
And I think I even mentioned the other day that I was watching the Knicks Atlanta Hawks game, and the organ player at Madison Square Garden was playing it. And it's just you'll just hear it everywhere. It's on. I think it's been on video games, probably Guitar Hero, stuff like that.
It's a great riff. I mean. And you write a riff that good, like you're going to get propelled into that next category. And they did. And one thing I will say, and I don't want to get into the song too much, but just in general, I really made a conscious effort to take myself out of that and just listen to it in the context of the album. Because nowadays, I mean, hell, this album was released in 2003. Yep. So, you know, it's kind of been around for a good, 8 years?
8 years. It's 2021, man.
Oh, geez.
Like 18 years.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
That dude. Whew, fucking silver alert right here. That's a senior moment. Yeah, 18 years.
Bartender Joe Boo needs a refill.
Yeah. And I'm really good at math too.
He's really good.
But yeah, dude, God. Math. After that song being around, like all that being around 18 years, it becomes hard, I guess, to number one, add correctly. And then number two, like, take yourself out of that and just listen to it in the context of the album. Because I know we kind of talked about that offline. And maybe not even that song, there's others. But that one, first and foremost.
Certainly. Yeah, absolutely. It's it's an iconic song. And I'd be curious is, you know, the way I kind of tried to look at it is like, wow, okay, let's say this is, you know, I didn't know the White Stripes before. I heard Seven Nation Army. I go to the store and I buy this album. I listen to that song. It's the first track on the album. And then I listen to everything else after it. And to me, the track itself, and we'll talk about this in the track, is a little bit, I think, of an outlier. But I'd be curious as to, because I had listened to and had previous White Stripes stuff, so I kind of had an idea of what their sound was. But not knowing their sound, I'm curious as to what some people may have thought and their impression was, kind of expecting everything to be this hard, raw rock type sound, which this album has a variety of different tracks.
It does. And I will say, dude, I got to give all the credit to you on this one. I don't remember anyone else in my life really being a kind of proponent for the White Stripes like you were. And I very distinctly remember, once you kind of got me into their music, like I made this mix CD and I remember going down to Florida and listening to it. And dude,
yeah,
a lot of what was on that CD was on this album. Album, and I think many people would regard this as their best album. I sure as hell would. It's a great album. I mean,
yeah, the majority, here's an interesting thing. There might be albums that I actually like more as an album, but the majority of my favorite songs fall on this album.
Yeah,
that
sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
I think, I know one thing you want to get to is the recording of this album.
Dude.
And just the studio and how they did it. No computers used during the writing, recording, mixing, or mastering of the album.
I really like that. I was really floored to read that and then to look up Tolerag Studios and to see what it was about. So I don't know if we want to start there, because I could.
I absolutely think we should start there. Why don't you
kick it? Okay, so yeah. The writing, recording, mixing, mastering, everything, there was no computers used, which, dude, way to go, because as much as the aid of computer recording has made things possible for example, for me to record my own music in a way that I could have never dreamed of prior to that, I think there's something magical about a band that just embraces the simplicity, and that's what they go after. And the White Stripes did that from day one, and they kept with that. I mean, I don't know, but I'd be surprised if they used a fucking computer on anything they ever did. Honestly. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because recently we came out with an episode about the new album by Wolf Alice, right? And Blue Weekend. And we talked about how clean and crisp and everything their sound was. And on that episode, we also talked about how, it's really great to have bands that have that gritty, dirty, kind of nasty sound a little bit. Like the Black Keys will do that sort of stuff. But I think Jack White in most of his recordings really embodies that. He loves to live in an analog world, right?
Yeah, like I don't know that anyone's ever done it better, honestly. I like what the Black Keys do, but they're, in a way, they're not as dirty as the White Stripes, and that's one thing I like about it. And you can just hear, you can hear and feel the soul in everything they do. And I remember talking with one of my favorite coworkers and mentors, Mr. Jim McKnight, J-Mac. And he would tell me how he would roll around in his car and listen to Ball and Biscuit and try to turn this song up loud enough or it would just like crack his speakers. And I'm like, dude, I couldn't think of a better goddamn song to do that with, because it's... Man. Like, you just, when you hear that, I mean, you can just feel every part of it. Yeah. You can just feel it. It's so good.
100%. Absolutely. Well, so, dude, they recorded this, actually very quickly. I think they said, I saw 2 weeks. I saw 10 days where they did 12 of the 14 tracks in that time. And it was done, one, I think, on an 8-track tape machine. Using all like pre 1960s recording gear.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that was his comment, was that everything used to record the album was pre-1963. And that's really cool, because when you look at some of the photos from Touareg Studios and look into Touareg Studios, I mean, it's like when you watch the videos of like early Beatles recordings, like the faders in the studio aren't these little faders we have today. They're like these fucking levers, man. And everything is this big, monstrous machine with dials. And I mean, it's gorgeous, because you can just imagine. Well, you could imagine what it sounds like, or you could just listen to Elephant.
Listen to the album.
Yeah. And I love that. The only discrepancy I had with that, and this is real nerdish, and I don't know, I think what Jack White was talking about was the recording equipment itself. Because they do use, in a few songs, a Fender Rhodes electric piano. Okay. And I don't think that they could have possibly used a version that was pre-1963, because the only versions of this thing pre-1963 are probably, number one, non-existent, and number two, they wouldn't have sounded as good as they got the Rhodes to sound on there.
Yeah, and there's actually another piece of equipment I want to talk to you about age-wise when we get into one of the songs that just stood out to me, and I had a question if that was around 63 or pre-63, but we'll wait till we get into the song for that.
Okay.
You know, so yeah, this album came out, you know, huge hit. They were playing all the Enormo domes, right? And basically, you know, it's prolonged. Like, I've looked for this on vinyl. I can't, I mean, it's on Discogs, but I go to the store. I can't find it on vinyl. They did release, though, on Record Store Day in 2013, a 10th anniversary edition. I know. That was, of course, I mean, you know,
red, white, and black. White
and black. Yeah. I mean, which,
of course, and I like that, because they said they kind of like mess with the cover, and Meg's dress was black in that version.
There's so many different things. Well, here's the thing. So apparently this album has, there's six different versions of the cover between the CD, the LP, and then the UK, the US, and then other countries' editions.
Damn.
So there's, you know, six different, and I bet, Graham, there's a super fan out there watching right now who has all six of those editions.
And I would love to know.
What is your favorite version and why? Because, dude, that's just cool. I like it when they do different things like that. Now, I know, you know, we did an episode on White Pony by Deftones, and they had different color covers and everything. But to me, I think this is sort of a little different, where it's,
well,
it's,
yeah, because there's by something medium to it.
And region. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would just definitely like to know, you know, what those differences are, and if there's a favorite cover out there by anyone. I think that'd be,
you know, the only one. Cool. And I didn't look at this, but when I look at the cover now, I'm wondering if Meg in a red dress. Well, no, I don't know, because the background's red. Because part of me says if she's in a black dress, well, the amp that she's sitting on is black, so she kind of blends in with that. But if she was in a red dress, it would kind of deter from that, because the white dress really, like, I mean, unless you're looking at it really close. Well, yeah, but it also, like, kind of washes out with her face.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they're very white, and yeah, they are the white stripes. But he's got the red sort of, I don't know
what
you call it, cowboy outfit, and that kind of blends in. But
yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
And you know what's funny? I always thought the thing hanging down was a microphone.
Oh, it's a light bulb, right?
It's a light.
Yeah.
So obviously I don't have this on vinyl, because I didn't
obviously
ever look that close. You're not a golfer.
Yeah. Definitely not. So. Well, Grim, there's, I think we had about 14 tracks in this, and we got some details. We're going to talk about some of the music videos. So I think, unless there's anything specific you want to comment on before we get into it, I think we should probably get into the tracks here.
No, friend. I think that's fair. I think it's time to roll.
Well, track number one, the one, you know,
not, everybody knows.
Yeah, everybody knows. Seven Nation Army. Yeah, dude. So the thing couldn't that I wanted
back.
To... Yeah, the thing I wanted to talk about. So apparently, here's the thing. He wrote this. He came up with the riff while he was on tour in Melbourne. And he wanted to save the riff for a James Bond theme. And then after some time,
Fuck, yeah. That would have been sweet.
Yeah, I know, right? So here's the thing, though. After a little time, he is like, I have a slim chance of ever getting to write a James Bond theme. And so he just decided to put it in a White Stripes track. Funny thing is, 5 years later, he wrote and performed a song with Alicia Keys for the Quantum of Solace Bond theme. So that's kind of cool. So he actually did get to do it. I will say, I'm glad he decided to put it in Seven Nation Army and make the song. Because here's the thing. If he didn't write Seven Nation Army and come up with this song, 5 years later, he probably wouldn't have been asked.
That's true. Granted, I don't know the song that he did with Alicia Keys and Bond, but something tells me it's probably not as badass as Seven Nation Army.
It's a good song, though. I forget the name of it. Right. It is a good song. I do like the song.
I mean, Alicia Keys is really good, but I just, I don't associate her with the grit of Seven Nation Army.
Probably not. Well, dude, it's kind of funny because we are fellow Michiganders, and so is Mr. Jack White.
Yeah.
So the title of this song, though, he actually mistakenly, when he was a kid, he thought Salvation Army was Seven Nation Army.
Oh, that's funny.
And so that's kind of how we came up with the title for it.
I like it because it doesn't... I don't think that when I heard it, I think of this like fucking worldwide tour de force that's going to fuck you up.
Pretty much. That's kind of what I associate it with. Yeah.
Now, one thing I know that, again, I had talked about, I made a very conscious effort to listen to this song in a way as if I had not heard it a billion times.
It's an open mind. Yes.
And with that, I don't find it that out of place for the album. I really don't. And I kind of want to touch on the video a little bit too, because I love this idea of like it just keeps zooming in and like the fucking triangle, and everything, you know, I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And again, with the red, white and black aesthetic, you know, just,
of course.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have any other way. Yeah. For me, I do feel like it sticks out a little bit, and maybe I say that because it's such a huge hit and I have heard it a million times.
That's what
times.
I'm saying. You got to take it. You got to take it out of that context and just like,
I feel like it to me. And again, I'm, you know, not being a musician, I feel like it is more of a rock song than when I hear like, even sort of, their song is Black Math, but
yeah, dude,
it's a, you know, I mean, there's
Girl, You Have No Faith in Medicine. I mean,
yeah. Hypnotize. Yeah. Okay. Still, I don't know. There's something where I associate all those songs closer together than I do this song for some reason.
I understand that. And they are closer together musically. I think there was a journalist or a critic or somebody who kind of characterized this album as like punk blues, and those other songs that you mentioned to me kind of fill in that category, but this doesn't. And so I hear you on that one. I really do.
Now, the question I have for you, my friend, is to make that sound.
Which one?
The ding, 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 ding. Oh, yeah. Ding. Okay. So he connected a semi-acoustic guitar to a Digitech whammy pedal, a pitch which says it's a pitch shift effect. Lowering the pitch by an octave. Now, it's when it talked about the equipment, did they have that pre-1963?
Fuck no. So, and that's actually surprising to hear that he did that. They may have had, I don't know the history on if there were octave pedals back then. I know Hendrix used an octave pedal in like All Along the Watchtower, but you're talking like 1969-ish there. So,
that's true. Yeah.
And that's where in the same comment I made about the Rhodes, I feel like that comment is based more toward the equipment that it took to record the album as opposed to what was used to make the sounds, because the Rhodes would not fall in that category either. I'm actually surprised he didn't use a bass and just overdub it.
Yeah. I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, who am I to say anything? Because I think the proof is in the pudding on this one. And it actually, to me, if you hadn't told me that, I would have thought that he overdubbed a bass because the tone that they got out of that was like real spot on.
It definitely is. It definitely is. Well, I mean, I think we've talked a lot about this song. I don't know if we need to say any more.
You want to move on to Beat a Dead Horse here.
Move on to Black Math. Dude. I mean, this song is so nasty. I think it's a great follow-up to Seven Nation Army.
And I think you need something this raucous to like follow it up because anything else would seem too tame.
Yeah. You wouldn't follow this up with like In the Cold, Cold Night probably, right?
No. Or even There's No Home for You Here. That just doesn't have enough. But Black Math is Black Math. See, to me, like Black Math is kind of like that when that journalist or critic said punk blues. That's the fucking punk part.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Especially the way he sings. He has such an interesting voice. The way he sings a lot of his songs, he can sing very raw and hard, but then he can sing almost like teenage childish, like a very young, sweet sound. At the same time, like I wouldn't say like, you know, he's a vocalist and, you know, he has like a beautiful voice or anything.
But I don't think he's trying to.
But he doesn't need to because what it does, it fits the music so well. And it's very unique. And I haven't heard really anything like that or anyone sing like it. So I think
One thing I would say is for a lot of these songs, like the harder ones, you can take these old microphones that they were no doubt using and kind of like push them. And when you push them and you produce distortion on analog gear, it doesn't sound shitty. It sounds fucking awesome, like good. The way that his voice sounds. And I don't think they did that with the guitars because you can get the guitars to break up enough on the amps and everything. Yeah. But with his voice, I think they did that. And they did just a beautiful job of it because his voice sounds great on the album, like exactly how it's supposed to.
100%. I mean, dude, this song rocks, of course, you know, distorted guitar, really just kind of in your face, a good follow up to Seven Nation Army. But even like he does different guitar sounds throughout, you know, all the songs in the album.
Yeah. So,
It'll be nastier, but then he comes to a little to his solo, I think, in this, and it's a little cleaner but squeakier. Like he takes some of the distortion off of it and makes it squeak a little bit, and then the song picks back up and it's
And I think sometimes that's the difference between distortion and fuzz. Sure. Like if you have a good fuzz pedal, you can make something a little different. And I don't know how I want to say this, but it's like the difference between just that nasty distorted sound, and it's almost more like a dot matrix printer. Okay. I don't know if that makes sense, but like I can hear it in my head. But anyways,
it's good.
There's no home for you here, girl. Go away.
If only someone could stop the voices in my head.
Dude.
So
back and we'll forth in my mind behind a cigarette.
Yeah. there's track number three. There's No One Home for You Here, which is the fourth single off the album, interestingly enough.
Oh, really?
And dude, I thought this quote was pretty great because now they used, what do we say, an 8-track recorder for this?
Yeah.
And dude, this is Jack White's quote. Our idea was to see how far we could go with an 8-track recorder. And I think how far we went is too far.
You know, I don't want to say I understand like I was fucking there, but I feel like I can understand what he's saying. And the only reason I say that is because, you know, when they do that part where it's like the vocal breakdown.
Yeah.
That is like almost artificially thick because there's two of them. Meg doesn't sing that well. And so, you know, it's basically like him and in a bunch of effects or whatever when they're doing that part of it.
Yeah.
But I guess I can kind of pretend to feel like I understand that.
Okay.
Because those vocals have always surprised me. Those vocals, I think, in that part of the song, to me, are the most produced part of the album, easily.
Yeah, I could definitely say that. And this song has really interesting structure.
Yeah, it does.
I find, like, the way it starts, it's got like these angelic harmonies, right? And the lyrics are doubled, and then it like chills out. And he kind of sings soft and sweet. Like it starts way up high and then he brings it down.
And you got the Rhodes piano in there. And the Rhodes piano in this one is interesting. And I find this in both of them that they use it because he does a really good job. The Rhodes can have a very bell-like tone, which you can hear sometimes, this bell-like tone. And other times you can make it kind of bark, you know, like a dog, kind of how you just kind of...
Like a dog.
Hit it. And I think that they do a good job in this one of getting both of those tones. Now, my gut would tell me, as recording one of these pianos and owning one for many years, this was probably done through an amplifier as opposed to direct in, because it's hard to just get the fucking grit without going through an amp, because you can get those tubes to break up. Gotcha. But the bell-like tones, that I kind of like how they get to a couple times. They really get that nice. They do a good job with it, and I think it stylistically it fits so well.
It does. Moving on to track number four, we have our lone cover of the album.
Yeah,
I just don't know what to do with myself. Initially written by Mr. Burt Bacharach, and I guess Hal David gets credit as well. First recorded by Chuck Jackson, which I have not heard that version. That was shelved, unreleased, until a 1984 compilation. Then somebody, Tommy Hunt, also recorded a version in 1962.
Dusty Springfield is the one that people
Dusty know. Springfield, Dionne Warwick, Marsha Hines, all recorded. I mean, yeah, there's been some songs out there that we've talked about a little bit that have been recorded many times. I was surprised to see this one being recorded so many times.
Yeah, I would agree. And I didn't, of course, I like the fact that, okay, so they're going to choose a cover. So they choose a fairly obscure one. I think that's like indicative of them, and that's cool. For many people to hear it, you wouldn't know it's a cover, right?
Nope. I didn't probably until I started really doing the research.
I didn't either. And one thing I like about it is I can guarantee none of the other covered recordings of this song sound like this one when they get that. They just like the guitar sounds pretty like sure it's ripping apart.
I have a feeling Dionne Warwick's version does not sound like that.
No, probably not.
Call it a hunch. Now, we talked about the music video a little bit, and they've had some great music videos. We're going to talk about another one a little later. That's one of my favorite music videos
ever.
This one, however, directed by Sofia Coppola, daughter of Francis Ford Coppola. She directed Virgin Suicides. Very talented, great director. It also features supermodel Kate Moss, who is pole dancing and doing
stuff. She looks hot, but other than
in her underwear, but other than that,
the video does absolutely nothing for me other than the fact that Kate Moss is hot.
Yeah, there's pretty much that. So, I mean, you could really just go on Google and look up a picture of Kate Moss and be like, okay, cool.
Just kind of like move it around on your phone and like you that's the video. If it's in black and white. That's
pretty much it. It's in black and white. So,
I agree with you. With some of the other amazing videos that they have, I'm like, man, that one seems like a real dud. And then Sofia Coppola, didn't she do Lost in Translation too?
She did as well. Yes, she did.
Anyways.
Okay. All right. Well, moving on. It's getting a little cold here. Track number five, In the Cold, Cold Night. Very simple, straightforward song. Meg front and center, man. She gets to sing it. Now, I swear there's other songs on other albums where she sings on, and the songs aren't coming to my head right now.
She does. Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
I kind of like it because it's like in the Beatles when Ringo sings.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what I mean? There isn't a lot of them, but when he does, you know. Yeah.
This is her, dude, this is like her good night, right? Was it on the White Album, right? This is pretty much it.
Yeah, I felt pretty like this it. Is more like her Octopus's Garden. Oh, well, no, but no. In the cold, cold night. No, it is her good night.
Good night. Yeah. So, again, it's a very straightforward song. I think Jack pretty much just plays the acoustic.
He's playing octaves.
It, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. It's a short song, too.
They don't credit him, but I feel like he's playing like there's like a subtle organ in the background of this one. And not the Rhodes. I feel like it's an organ.
Was that? Yeah. I thought there was something in there. Something in the background. Mm-hmm. I don't remember at the moment, but track number 6, I Want to Be the Boy to Warm Your Mother's Heart.
I actually really like the sentiment of this one because it's really kind of a sweet sentiment if you're like, you know, in a relationship with someone you love and like, you're like, look, I'm not going to fuck this up. And
just don't fuck it up.
To
me, I feel like it kind of has a classic White Stripes song to me because it has the softness in the way he sings. It's got distorted guitar, some piano, but dude, the slide guitar, man, when that comes in, it's just like, oh man, it's cool. I'm just a sucker for the slide. And I don't
know. I hear you.
Yeah.
One thing I like about this and some of the other White Stripes songs, like you're mentioning, is there's an element of like almost like this childlike innocence about it.
Definitely.
Kind of like We're Gonna Be Friends. That's just a great song. And it's because it has that element.
Mm-hmm. And and it's interesting because he does. He sings one when he sings with kind of that younger youthful voice, right? He'll sing like that, but then some of his sort of subject matter and everything comes from a very just like this young teenage innocent kind of perspective, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot of other artists who do that. Most of them, especially in kind of the rock blues, it's like, hey, I'm adult and I'm grown and I'm whatever, you know, I'm a badass. And
it's like that dude in Country Place you want to fuck.
Yeah, exactly. This has a lot more innocence to it.
Yeah, it does.
I was going to say, I think that goes right into the next song you've got in your pocket, right?
Exactly.
You were
going to
segue the shit out of that, weren't you?
Yeah. Oh, so hard. So hard. I was going to segue that right off a cliff.
Woo. I like it.
Too soon. Just like the owner of Segway.
Oh, did that happen? Right. Shit.
Yeah.
Okay. But dude, again, a nice, sweet song, acoustic. And like you were talking about, We're Gonna Be Friends. I feel like that's this album sort of We're Gonna Be Friends a little bit. It's not as uppity maybe, but it has that feel, right?
But at the same time, lyrically speaking, it's like the White Stripes version of Under My Thumb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, think about the lyric, you know, what he's saying.
Yeah. Wow. I like that, dude.
Yeah.
Under My Thumb. It's a good one. Now then we move on to track 8, dude. Ball and Biscuit. Let's just get nasty and dirty all at the same time. I don't know.
It's like J-Mac says, man, turn that shit up loud enough where it's going to blow your fucking car apart.
Yeah. Dude, this song is over 7 minutes, and I'll tell you what, every time I listen to it, it doesn't feel like it, man.
Nope.
It really doesn't. It goes, and it's pretty great.
Dude, the just all-out rawness and honesty of how that guitar is recorded. I would really, and this is such a nerd thing, but I would really like to see what amp was he using. Probably like a Fender fucking twin or something. Just cranked to where the tubes, 11. Yeah, to where the tubes are just like screaming to break.
Yeah.
And just like how far away was the mic, like all these things, because the tone is just gold.
Yeah. Well, so there's a couple different things where people have talked about sort of the meaning of this song and whatnot. Some think it has like sort of drug references, where
I don't think
they're talking about the ball being cocaine and Biscuit being amphetamine. I never made that.
Dude, the ball and a Biscuit, like, let's do it and have a sandwich. Like, that's...
Yeah. Well, and then sort of the lyrics maybe suggesting that the couple is trying to quit, but it's done in the future tense. Like, a lot of blues lyrics kind of making optimistic propositions while they're high. Like, hey, I'm going to do this. It's, down the road.
Wow, I heard none of these things.
I haven't done a deep dive into the lyrics, but here's the thing. Also, dude, do you know about the SDC Coles 4021 Ball and Biscuit microphone?
No.
Because they were saying that that microphone could have been used at Touareg Studios during
the recording session. Sounds like something that would have.
Make sense. But, you know, he's some of the words, and these are all weird things. The Seventh Son is based on an American folk legend.
Yes.
Seventh Son would be granted supernatural powers.
Yeah. But dude, that's not different than any other blues lyrics. Think about the lyrics to fucking Jimi Hendrix. Dude, come on, it's escaping me. What's like the most Voodoo Child?
Voodoo Child.
Dude, the lyrics to Voodoo Child, he's like, I fucking chopped down a mountain with the edge of my hat. Like, there's a lot of blues lyrics that talk about like these like supernatural powers or something.
Well, so also here's another thing is, you know, he talks about being the seventh son. Jack White was actually the seventh and final son in his family of nine children. Pretty true.
Oh, that's awesome. I did not know that. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like how he does also the reference to, I might be your third man. And then, you know, you get the third man records and all, like, that's,
yeah,
that's also cool.
The White Stripes apparently love the number three for some reason. I don't know what it is, but they really like the number three. I've read that multiple times. So, but dude, this song has been used in the Captain Morgan ad. It was also used also in the beginning of The Social Network. I don't know if you've seen that or remember that movie.
Have not. I probably should. Yeah.
Dude, it's really good. Dude, David Fincher, man, he did it. You know, he did Fight Club and all that shit. But in, like, I believe it's in the opening bar scene, right as we're kind of like, it's pretty much the opening scene, like right when they get in there. And what's his name? Zuckerberg and his girlfriend at the time, played by Rooney Mara, who's an amazing actress, one of my favorites, her little part. But yeah, it's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, you want to button the button?
Dude.
Because this... It's pretty hard.
You know, admittedly, just based on the makeup of this song, it was never one of my favorites.
Okay.
And then I saw the fucking Michelle Gondry video of this thing. And one thing that I think is amazing that he did, and the two that I would think of is this video and the one for Around the World. But this video even more so, how he visually illustrates what's happening in the music. Yep. And despite its simplicity, to watch that video and see that, you're just like, dude, both of these things that are happening right now are totally badass and awesome.
Yeah. So if you have not seen this music video, highly recommend checking it out. Yeah. Michelle Gondry is just one of the best music video directors. He also directed the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He's just phenomenal. And this video has very quick cuts, but it's very sort of mathematical. And
it's fucking genius in that way.
And moving around. It's really, really cool. It probably took a lot of work and manpower. Just like, hey, we got to move. Here's this.
Let's line them up. How many goddamn fucking Fender twin amps and drum sets did they use for this thing?
For this.
It's amazing.
It is
like when I saw, I'm just like, dude, you win. That is awesome.
No, it's pretty great. And dude, Beck, actually, I didn't notice it until I read about it. Beck has a little cameo in it.
He does?
During one of the scenes where they're playing, there's a guy who walks up to Jack White, and we're dressed all white, and he has this like red box, I think, and he opens it up for Jack, and you don't get to see what inside, and then he closes it and he walks away. It's just like this weird little thing.
Dude, like Marcellus Wallace's briefcase.
It's pretty much.
We happy?
Yeah, we happy. I will say one more thing about this is that, you know, Michel Gondry is a very unique director, and on the interview that I saw on his DVD, he talked about he doesn't like to do it, as you know, he doesn't like to do the standard typical music video of a band playing instrumental.
No, because that's stupid. Stuff. It's been done a billion times.
Exactly. He was like, yeah, how do you do that? But in this video, he actually does it, but he does it in a different way where the band is actually playing it, and he does it like his way. And it's the perfect song to do it to because it's just got that driving beat.
And yeah, you know, one thing that I love about this song, and I was talking to my wife about this because she was like, man, you know, Lucy goes over to all her friends' houses. They got like jungle gyms and they got like trampolines and they got bounce houses and we don't have anything. And I was listening to this album and I thought about that line. I got a backyard with nothing in it.
That's pretty good, dude. I like that. All right, moving on. Little Acorns. This is like an ode to all the squirrels out there in the world.
Dude, I actually love this song. I think it's brilliant in what it says. And in a way, like, uplifting, because if you're a person who, you know, you feel like you got a lot of problems on your plate, just to listen to it. And I love the narration by Mort Krim, who's apparently a newscaster.
Something like that. Yeah.
I mean, his voice has that sound, but I really like the kind of the idea behind this song.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And, you know, it has that piano in it. So the piano sounds sounds old, man. It's out of tune.
It's actually out of tune.
Is that what it is? Okay. But then it cuts and the guitar riff picks up right where it's the same thing, dude. It just picks up right where the piano left off. And of course, it's just like, dude, sometimes you're just like, I could see how people could maybe get sort of be like, oh, okay, Jack White's just going to rip it up and shred it. But dude, he's so intense, man. Like he's just so good. You know, it's
dude, like this is Squirrel Girl.
This is definitely a different song, but it's pretty
good. I know, and I really like the narration for some reason because I think it paints a picture in a way that like if he sang that, I don't know if it would paint the same picture.
Oh hell no!
Because it's just delivered in a way where you can take it all in.
100%. Sometimes it doesn't matter what you say. It's how you say it.
True.
So, dude, Hypnotize. Now, I know this is one of your favorites because it's one of my favorites.
Absolutely.
Dude, it's under 2 minutes.
I know.
And I just, part of me is like, God, I wish it was longer, but it almost doesn't need to be.
No.
It literally kicks you in the balls. And if you don't have balls, it kicks you someplace really hard.
It does. And, you know, like this reminds me of one of my other favorite White Stripes songs, which is not on this album. It reminds me very much of Fell in Love with a Girl.
Yeah, because structurally,
I feel like they're very similar.
100%.
Yeah.
I have that in my notes. Reminds me of Fell in Love with a Girl. No shit. Yeah. But, dude, just this straightforward rock song under 2 minutes. Dude, the groove it gets into.
Oh, man, I know.
It's just amazing. This could be in my top five White Stripes songs.
Oh yeah. Like if I made a White Stripes greatest hits, you bet your fucking ass this would be on it.
Yeah. And I don't think it was on the other one. Come on, Jack.
Thanks.
Come on. Get us together. All right. Track number 12. The air near my fingers.
I think the only other presence of the Fender Rhodes on this album.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, yep. I was going to ask what he plays on it.
And I can't remember, but I think in this one, they do a better job of like mixing, getting like the growling tone and that bell like tone in there sometimes too, because I think that's a very nice dichotomy that you can do with that piano. And they, and you know, I don't, he's not like fucking Herbie Hancock or like a huge jazz pianist that's really just blowing this thing out of the water, right. But he doesn't need to be. What he's doing, I feel like he gets a really great variation of tone out of the piano, and it's used just how it should be.
Yeah, and I love it. It adds such a nice touch to this song. It does. I feel like the middle, because I feel like it comes in sort of, it's really prevalent at two parts, sort of in the middle and then yep. at the end. I feel like in the middle, I wish it went on maybe a little longer, because I think they extend it towards the end. But if there was one, I guess I would say constructive criticism, I almost wish it was a little more prevalent. Like it just stood out a little more. That's my only thing, but I love
but
it.
But that's not their band, right? That's what I thought too. I mean, I would love to hear it more, but that's not their band. But I do like when you watch live videos of them playing, like he'll jump over and play it on, like if they were going to play the song. And I think that's really cool.
Yep. Track number 13, dude, girl, you have no faith in medicine.
Now, dude, I had read that that he had wrote this and intended to put it on, if I'm not mistaken, White Blood Cells.
Yeah, I think they actually recorded it and were going to put it on there. And Meg's, there was like a line or something that she didn't like. She wanted it off. I would one if anybody out there knows.
I want to know what that line is.
I want to know what that line is. Two, is that version available? Is it out there? If so, drop a link or let us know, because I would love
this version is awesome. And I mean, dude, when I first started listening to him, thanks to the dude Reno again, dude, this was immediately when I was like, that's going on the CD.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's so weird. I like the use of playing with the lyrics where he says, like, I see the acetaminophen, you see
the
medicine.
I see the medicine. Yeah. I see the medicine. I see the acetaminophen, you see the medicine, oh girl.
Oh, that's what he says.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I thought he played with the lyrics even more that says, I see the acetaminophen, you see the acetaminophen. Like, which either way, I love the lyrics, but I like the way that you can kind of play with that word. Acetaminophen.
Yeah, acetaminophen, you see the medicine. Oh, girl, you have no faith in medicine.
Yeah. Now, isn't that acetaminophen, I believe, is Tylenol.
Tylenol. Tylenol, aspirin, all one of those things. I don't know. I just take it and it makes my headache go away. Yeah. To make the headache go away.
Another thing I like, and I was going to get out my guitar to illustrate this, but I love in this one how he hits the upper part of the strings to make this nasty tone. Do you know what part I'm talking about? And if not, think about it.
I'm going to think about it real hard to be the shepherd.
Yeah. Now this is of course not, because when you do it in an electric, it would make a totally different sound. But when he gets those pauses and he gets that, you know, get that real high.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yes. Dude,
that is. Yeah. Really, I've done that because certain in the way, and this is interesting, like the way that certain guitars are set up based on how the strings are spaced, they will sound different. So like I have a Stratocaster where it's like a neck and then there's all six. And that one, when you hit it, just makes this it's especially in a distorted amplifier. Yes. It's great.
Dude,
but I think he's
so funny
using,
you bring that up, because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I've really liked that sound when he does that, because I've used that. And whenever I hear people like, dude, Morello's use that, like a lot of people have used that technique to kind of just hit that as a rhythmic thing. And it's so cool.
I mean, dude, how much fun do you think he has playing this song live? This song just seems like it would be so much fun to play live, man.
Yeah.
He just, it moves and it's got solo, but he's just... He's just driving it too, man. I just think it's got to be a blast to play live.
Well, and then the whole time he's looking at Meg and he's like, "Am I going to say it?
Can I say it?
Like, am I going to say the lyric? Am I going to do the other version?
Yeah. All right. Last track, we got to wrap this one up here.
Yeah,
we are on track number 14. Well, it's true,
that we love one another.
This is a kind of a fun little song, acoustic thing. Now they bring in Holly Golightly.
Golightly, which I love the name.
That's great. And her and Meg and Jack kind of have a little threesome a little bit. They're just kind of singing and joking and being silly.
It kind of seems. Now, and she's older, I think, than the two of them.
Yeah, I think she would be, yeah.
And I think she's like kind of famous in her own right for being kind of a, how do I want to say this? You know, a singer-songwriter, but like kind of the, of that like vintage kind of sound variety, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I haven't listened to a ton of her stuff.
No, I actually didn't know anything about her, but I love her voice.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
I actually really love the end when she like says that was a good take and that they should celebrate and have a cup of tea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the song's just funny. I mean, I think my favorite line is when she asks him for money to pay her bills, and he's like, "All the money I gave you, you've been spending on paying bills."
Yeah. Right. Right. I think one of the main lines sticks out as well. Holly, I love you too, but there's just so much I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Jack, give me some money to pay my bills. All the day I gave you, but Holly, you've been using on pain pills.
Yeah. It's just, this is like a more grown up joking version of we're going to be friends in a way.
It definitely is. It certainly is. So. Well, all right, everyone.
But I like it because you can hear it that they had fun recording it.
Oh, yeah, right. It was like, hey, let's just mess around. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but.
No, but you did. So this is the point in the show, ladies and gentlemen, where we are going to scratch our track. Now, if this is your first time here.
Oh, it's time.
You know, this doesn't mean it's a horrible track. We don't like the track. We think this is a phenomenal album. Actually, maybe we don't like the track. It's very possible. But, you know, back in the day, CDs and records would get scratched and you couldn't choose. In this game, you get to choose. So now Grim, how about you? Do you want to take the tea? You want to, I'll take the next one.
I'll put her down and tee up here. Okay. And for me, this was an easy one. No disrespect to Meg, but dude, In the Cold, Cold Night is the obvious choice for me. It's just, I just find it a little lacking.
Sure. I can't argue with that. And guess what, Grim? That's why.
Overtime.
So for those of you, again, it's your first time here. Sometimes we pick the same track and we go to overtime like the Islanders and Capitals did. So, yes, In the Cold, Cold Night. Same reason. It just doesn't do anything for me. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nearly 3 minute song. If it was this kind of fun little short little interlude or something where they just
like
kind of just
30 to 40 seconds.
Yeah. But I don't need a 3 minute song of that. There's really no reason for it. And sorry, Meg. I just don't need it. So yeah. Graham, OT zone, you got a backup?
Oh, I got to go first on the backup.
I'll go first on the backup.
Okay.
The song that we just talked about, I'm going to go with, well, it's true. We don't love one another because it is a fun song. Yeah. That we love one another. Cause it is a fun song. It's kind of sort of silly. And I think, dude, you started with Seven Nation Army. I'll tell you what, man. Ended the album with "Girl, You Have No Faith in Medicine." That's
shit. I
could go out on that.
Did not think about it in that context. When you bring that up,
oh, that's what you pay me for.
I respect that, and that makes a lot of sense. That wasn't my second choice, but okay. I follow your logic, and I approve.
I like what you've done here.
I like what you've done here, yeah.
What do you got?
My backup scratch in the event of overtime would be I Want to Be the Boy to Warm Your Mother's Heart.
Okay.
Because for some reason, just like they ended, and I can't, the name of the album's escaping me, but how they ended one of their albums with Hotel Yorba, I kind of, didn't they end it with Hotel Yorba? Isn't that the last song on one of them?
White Blood Cells. It's on, not White Blood Cells, it's on Dishtia.
It's not the last track?
Jumble, jumble. Shit, where is it?
Well, anyways, yeah. I just, there's something about these kind of like, these friendly kind of joking around songs that I like for them. To me, it makes sense. And I think it's good to go out on that note, or it's going to be good. It's going to be good. But yeah, I want to be the boy to warm your mother's heart. I like the sentiment and all, but like if it wasn't on there, I wouldn't like drive my car into a lake or something.
No, so. And nobody would certainly want you to do that. Definitely not.
Not the producers of the Dude and Groom Show. So
no. Shoot, dude, I'm not even finding Hotel Yorba right now. I'm not looking close enough. I wanted to.
Really, dude. It's on the greatest hits, bro.
Fail. Actually, I think it's because it's a B-side.
Epic fail. Oh, to me, it seems like it would have been a great ending song to an album. But to me, well, it's true that we love one another is in the same ballpark as that one. And we're going to be friends. And you know what I mean? Like, just those. Yeah. So there's something about that I like. So, anyways.
I'm with you.
Enough of my ramblings.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up.
If you're still with us, thank you. I hope you enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. We enjoyed it.
There's more to come. We got a good one coming out on Monday. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
And we scratch on Wednesdays and we have fun on Mondays.
Scratch real hard. Yeah.
Real hard. On that note, it is time to go.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Tims. Copyright 2021, The Dude and Grim Show.